Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Cancer Treatments and the Risk of Blood Clots, What You Need to Know. And this is a workshop that we're offering to give you information so that you will know what to do and the questions to ask your healthcare team. This is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have on the call today over 572 participants, so there's a lot of you on the call, and you're from all over the United States, from all different regions and areas of this country. And we also have international participants from Canada, India, Jamaica, Jordan, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really come from all over the world. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there is an outline that our speakers have prepared, as well as information about our speakers. There also is information about all of the collaborating organizations as a resource for you to use. And, of course, there is an evaluation form, and I'll ask you to take a moment at the end of the program today and complete that evaluation form. We very much appreciate your feedback. It helps us in planning programs. And indeed, the program today was based on feedback of you asking us to present programs on this topic. You'd heard about it, wanted to know more about it. And so please identify the topics you'd like us to offer and your thoughts about the program. And it really helps us really in planning and keeping these programs really relevant to you and what you want us to do. Now, today's program was made possible by an educational grant from Sanofi Aventis US LLC, and I really want to thank them for their support of our program today. Now, we have wonderful speakers, and I'm going to start by introducing our first speaker for today, Dr. Edith Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell is Clinical Professor of Medicine and Medical Oncology at Department of Medical Oncology. She's also Associate Director of Diversity Programs, Kimmel Cancer Center, Thomas Jefferson University. And Dr. Mitchell is also the award winner of the ASCO Humanitarian Award, quite a prestigious award given by ASCO, and she received that award this year. And Dr. Mitchell is going to address cancer and its treatments, overview of blood clots, deep vein thrombosis, or DVTs, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure to turn this program over to Dr. Mitchell.
Messner, thank you very much for the invitation to participate in this program today, and thanks to the other speakers. It is my pleasure to work with such a distinguished group of physicians from around the country, and thanks to our listeners who have taken time from their schedule today to listen to this program. Certainly, cancer treatment is very, very important, and what we know now is that more and more patients are undergoing successful cancer treatment, and more patients are surviving cancer. So this is good, and there have been a lot of changes over the years. Now, the program today focuses on blood clotting and cancer. However, I want to say, first of all, that thrombotic events, which is the official name of clotting, is more than just excessive blood clotting. It also involves inflammation of the blood vessels, and the inflammation of the blood vessels associated with thrombotic disorders was first described by Dr. Virchow, in which he identified three major components associated with thrombosis. The first is that there's endothelial injury or damage, inflammation to the blood vessels. There is a decrease in blood flow, and then there is an imbalance between factors that make blood clot and those factors that eliminate clot. And this results in the blood clot in a vessel. Thromboses or blood clots usually occur in the lower extremities, in the legs, but they can occur in other parts of the body. And the clinical outcomes of blood clots really depend on a number of factors. Now, first of all, blood clots can occur in individuals or patients who have been treated for cancer or who have active cancer. But blood clots also occur in individuals who have no evidence of cancer. And consequently, very important in many areas of medicine, not just for cancer treatment. So what do we know? For cancer patients, we know that the risk of thrombotic events increase significantly, and they're increased by 4 to 6 times that number in individuals who do not have cancer. We also know that thromboses or thrombotic events account for the second leading cause of hospitalization for patients who are being treated for cancer. We also know that if you look at all patients with thrombosis, whether they have cancer or not, approximately 20% of all patients with venous thrombotic events are treated for cancer. And we also know that a few patients, will have thrombotic events at the time of diagnosis of cancer. So it's very important in patients who have cancer and very important in individuals who do not have cancer. It is well known that there is an increase in the number of patients with thrombotic events. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the cancer caused the thrombosis or the clot. So it's very important for patients to understand what are the risks of thrombosis in patients. Certainly, there are risk factors that are related to the patient. And there are risk factors also related to the type of cancer, as well as risk factors related to certain types of treatment. So what do we mean by that? Well, there are some patient-related risk factors, such as age. Blood clots are more common in individuals who are over age 40 or 50, and they actually increase with age, and they are fairly rare in children and young adults. The performance status of the patient or how much the patient is able to move around is very important. There are also perhaps some racial differences in that African Americans in the United States as well as some Hispanic or Latino patients tend to have higher rates of blood clots or thrombotic events, as well as there may be lower rates for Asians and Pacific Islanders. For individuals who have had a previous clot, there's also a risk, and other factors such as obesity and other medical problems such as lung disease or heart failure, kidney failure, et cetera. So there can be patient-related factors. There are some cancers that are more frequently associated with clots. And however, any type of cancer experienced by an individual may be associated. But more typically, we think about pancreatic cancer. There are some brain cancers that tend to have a higher risk of thrombotic events, as well as certain blood malignancies, but any cancer patient has a higher risk. There are also some treatments that might be associated with a higher risk. Now, this doesn't mean that the patient's physician won't use a medication because of this higher risk, but we have to remember that there are certain medications, such as the medication for treating blood breast cancer called tamoxifen, or another medication for treating widespread colon cancer called bevacizumab. This has a higher risk. So there are factors both related to the patients and any other medical problems that the patients might have, as well as the cancer and the type of treatment that is given. So what can be done? First of all, a good medical history for the treating physician and the treating staff. So any medications that the patient takes should be discussed with the treating team. There should be a good relationship and a good communication between any other physicians that the patients have, so that information and risk can be assessed and included in the patient's treatment plan. Any previous surgery or trauma, or if there have been previous clots, or if there is a family history of clots, then it's very important that the patient discuss this with the treating team. Any changes in the patient's clinical status, meaning if there are symptoms related to the clot, such as tenderness of the legs, or any new changes in edema or swelling of the lower extremities, should be discussed immediately with the treating team. And medications that are given by other physicians, again, should be discussed with the treating team so that the oncology team has an awareness of the factors that might increase the risk of thrombosis, and therefore, the physician team, the treating team, can be aware, but also the patient can inform the physician of any new changes in clinical status. So while thrombotic events are very common in medicine, we see them in patients who do not have any evidence of cancer. We see them in patients who currently have cancer and are being treated for cancer. The more advanced the cancer, the higher the risk, but that doesn't mean that patients with advanced cancers definitely will develop a clot. Clots are also more commonly seen in patients who have other medical problems in addition to cancer. And then once the cancer has been successfully treated, and the patient is surviving cancer, while the risk for thrombosis decrease, there is still some risk in cancer survivors. So we are always cognizant of this fact, and we are always evaluating patients for thrombosis. So thrombosis can be adequately treated. There are a number of medications available for successfully treating thrombosis, and there are some medical interventions that may help prevent clots. So it's very important to have a good communication system, communicating with the nurse or the physician or nurse practitioner, physician's assistant, or the pharmacist, whoever the patient communicates well with on the treatment team. It's very important to communicate any changes in the status of the body, any new findings, discuss that with the team, and that offers the best method of successfully evaluating thromboses or preventing thromboses in many cases, so that patients may receive their successful treatment of the cancer as well as treatment of other medical conditions, so that it's all integrated into one treatment plan. And with that, I think I'll stop there, and I thank you for the opportunity to discuss with the group today, and I look forward to the questions afterward. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you very
much,
Dr. Mitchell. Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Mitchell, for just a wonderful presentation, really for setting the context of the program today and for really identifying some of the important issues here. So thank you. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. Douglas Sawyer. Dr. Sawyer is Lisa M. Jacobson Professor of Medicine. He's Chief Division of Cardiovascular Medicine, Vanderbilt University Medical Center. And Dr. Sawyer is going to address understanding the causes and risk factors of DVTs, knowing the signs and symptoms, and practical guidelines to manage DVTs. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Sawyer.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Dr. Mitchell, for setting this up. And it's really a great pleasure to be on the phone with you today. I want to build off of what Dr. Mitchell has just gone over and briefly just address a few other issues. So, as Dr. Mitchell highlighted, a number of things about people determine their risk for their forming these large clots, these deep vein thromboses that we're talking about today. And conceptually, the simplest way to look at it is when the blood in our deep veins is stagnant or isn't moving as well, that's a major risk for a deep vein thrombosis. We all have as well inherited a tendency to clot or not clot from our family. And so as Dr. Mitchell said, it's very important to know your family history. And if there's someone in the family, first degree relative in particular, that's had a deep vein thrombosis or a pulmonary embolus, which we'll talk about in a minute, you want to record that and let your doctors know about that. So those are the things, those family history and then as age, as Dr. Mitchell mentions, are things that we can't control. But there are things that we can control about our risk for a blood clot. Before I get to that, you know, a couple other risk factors to remember to share your history with your physicians. Prior injury to your arms or legs can increase your risk of a blood clot, in part because it might change the nature of the blood flow in your extremities. And so it's important to remember if you had knee surgery at some point in your life or hip surgery and share that with your physicians. Heart failure, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, also increases your risk in part because it just slows the blood flow through your body. Another one that is important is anything that's been put into a vessel in your body that can cause irritation and become a place for a clot to form. So, for example, a pacemaker or a catheter that's been placed for given medications. So the things you can control are your physical activity, which is a major determinant of blood clots, particularly in the lower extremities. So people that are going on long car or airplane journeys are at increased risk for developing blood clots. Prolonged bed rest, whether it's a hospital stay or a stay at home, where you're not up and about much. In the hospital, we often are using medications to try to prevent those blood clots from forming. But there are things people can do even when they're in bed rest to prevent the lower extremity clots. In addition, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, being overweight or obese and smoking are other controllable risk factors. So we often advise people, and this is anybody traveling long distance in a car, to take frequent breaks, or if they're not able to take a break, such as in an airplane, to habitually exercise their lower extremities by flexing their ankles and trying to make sure there's periodic muscle activity that helps the circulation and prevent clots from forming. Symptoms of those blood clots, as Dr. Mitchell mentions, are things that you want to let your clinicians know about. And they include swelling, because as you can imagine, when the blood clot forms, it prevents the drainage of the blood back to your central part of your body, and warmth over the affected area. As Dr. Mitchell mentioned, inflammation, which is associated with redness and warmth, is another sign, as well as pain. Pain in the lower extremity in particular is often a symptom of a blood clot. And you ought to let your clinicians know as soon as you develop any of those symptoms. One of the things that we're worried about with these blood clots in the large veins is if they migrate up to the lungs and cause what's called a pulmonary embolism. And the symptoms of pulmonary embolism are any sudden onset of shortness of breath or chest pain, feelings of lightheadedness and dizziness, rapid pulse. These are symptoms that you want to get right to your providers, either in daylight hours or to the emergency room if necessary. Your doctors will, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, do a careful history and physical to try to figure this out, but the blood clot is ultimately diagnosed by trying to look for evidence of a clot in a vein, either by a ultrasound or other imaging methods. And these are treatable, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, with medications that will require some careful monitoring, because while blood clot we're trying to prevent, the medications, as you can imagine, are going to increase risks of bleeding. And so medications for blood clots put you in an increased risk for bleeding. And you'll need careful monitoring with your doctors. There are other treatments for more advanced blood clots. Other things that you can do to prevent blood clots include, for people at high risk or in the hospital for prolonged bed rest or unable to move around too much at home, include compression stockings that are worn in the lower extremities that maintain some pressure to prevent the venous pooling that we talked about as a risk factor. So, Carol, I think with that I'll stop here, and we look forward to answering any questions people have.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sawyer, for such a wonderful presentation and very informative. And you really represent that interdisciplinary team in terms of your cardiovascular expertise. So thank you so much for this for your presentation. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Our next speaker is Dr. Gary Lyman. Dr. Lyman is professor of medicine and director of comparative effectiveness and outcomes research in oncology. He's Duke University School of Medicine and the Duke Cancer Institute. He's a senior fellow as well, Duke Center for Clinical Health Policy Research, and he is also chairing the American Society of Clinical Oncology, or ASCO, Committee on Thrombosis. So we're very fortunate to have him on the call today. And I now turn the program over to Dr. Lyman.
Thank you, Ms. Messner, and thank you to Dr. Mitchell and Dr. Sawyer for really laying the landscape of this problem in patients with cancer. As a medical oncologist, of course, I'm very concerned about the issues that you've already heard presented, that cancer patients are at increased risk for blood clots. These sometimes occur because of symptoms. Sometimes they're picked up due to scans that are being done for the cancer. Both of these can be serious and have real consequences, including, of course, hospitalization in some cases to receive blood thinners, bleeding from those blood thinners as well as from the cancer. There's an increased risk of delaying treatment, so patients have their treatment interrupted sometime by these complications. The most serious consequence, of course, is some patients don't survive these episodes, and despite the best of aggressive treatment, a small but real proportion of patients do not make it through these complications, and thus the idea of preventing them wherever possible is extremely important. And then there's the unspoken word that I won't talk more about, but we have clear evidence that these complications in cancer patients drive up the cost of care quite substantially. So it has an impact on patients' lives, on their care, and their outcomes. It was because of all these issues, again, as a medical oncologist, I gained increasing concern and was asked by the American Society of Clinical Oncology, as Carolyn indicated, to chair a national guideline on cancer and thrombosis. And we undertook to look at five specific areas related to this question we thought were the most pressing issues. To address these, we did a big review, a large review of the world's literature based on randomized controlled trials. Randomized controlled trials, I'm sure all of you are aware, are the way we often do clinical research to demonstrate the effectiveness and safety of new treatments or even established treatments being used for a new purpose. And these are considered the highest level of evidence addressing specific questions. So we looked at the world's literature on five specific areas. One is, should patients with cancer who are in the hospital have preventive measures, specifically anticoagulation to prevent clots, because we know patients with cancer not only have an increased risk because of their cancer, but by virtue of being sedentary, being bedridden, going through procedures in the hospital. And fortunately, we had very good evidence from randomized controlled trials that in many patients who are hospitalized with cancer, they can have their risk significantly reduced with appropriate anticoagulation. And that has become standard in most major medical centers throughout the country. The other area where the risk is very great are hospitalized patients who are going through surgery. So we address that issue again. There are a number of randomized controlled trials that we turn to and identified that the patients undergoing major cancer surgery, big operations on their tumor, benefit from receiving prophylaxis with an anticoagulant, a blood thinner, either after the procedure or sometimes even beginning just before the procedure and then continuing for several days afterwards. A third area we looked at and found convincing data from the clinical trials was what to do in a cancer patient who actually developed a blood clot. Of course, they get treated much like a non-cancer patient gets treated with a blood thinner for an extended period of time. What we looked at, though, was how long should that be done, and is there a benefit for one blood thinner over another? That is, in trying to prevent a recurrence of the blood clot in the cancer patients. Studies clearly demonstrated cancer patients have not only a higher risk of getting a blood clot in the first place, but a higher risk of a recurrence of that blood clot despite treatment. And based on the results from these trials, we made recommendations for extending the treatment of these patients to prevent a recurrence of the blood clot for several months after the initial blood clot was diagnosed. A fourth area, and one that unfortunately, although there is some data, we're still looking for more and more data, and that's what to do in the most common situation, which are cancer patients being treated on the outpatient basis, what we call ambulatory cancer patients, the patient who comes into the clinic or into the office for their treatment, often over weeks or months. We know that they're, as a group, at increased risk of blood clots, but the risk does not seem to be as high as it is when they're in the hospital or going through surgery. So there have been some randomized trials that we looked at in this setting. Clearly, blood thinners can reduce the risk of blood clots in those patients, but it does require, at least based on the commonly used anticoagulants or blood thinners today, daily injections. And we know cancer patients inherently have some increased risk of bleeding, either from the tumor or from the procedures they're going through or other treatments they're receiving. So the data would suggest there's some further increased risk of bleeding if you're put on a blood thinner to try to prevent a blood clot. So you need to balance the benefit, the reduction in the risk of developing a blood clot if you're going through cancer treatment with any increase in risk of bleeding or other complications from that treatment. And we identified at least one specific situation in patients with multiple myeloma, a relatively uncommon but real type of cancer that has a very high risk of blood clots, and we recommended that they routinely be considered for some type of prevention. However, for the vast majority of cancer patients going through treatment in the outpatient setting, we couldn't identify at that time a specific additional group to recommend routine prophylaxis. We have developed in the meantime a scoring system, a risk stratification profile to identify patients who might be at somewhat higher risk than other patients. And this includes many of the same factors that Dr. Mitchell mentioned. Of course, the type of cancer, some types of cancer have a higher risk than others. The factors like obesity, patients who are overweight or obese seem to have a higher risk of these complications. And then certain blood counts, certain parameters that the doctor follows on treatment will fluctuate, and as they fluctuate, the risk may go up and down. So we attempted to identify a group of patients, a subgroup of patients that might benefit from treatment, and this is undergoing further investigation to see if this is something we can use in the clinic to select out from all the vast majority of patients going through cancer treatment in the clinics, ones that clearly would benefit and safely tolerate anticoagulation to prevent these complications. The last question we looked at with the guidelines was one that's been very intriguing, and that is whether giving anticoagulation, even in the absence of a blood clot, can have an impact on the cancer itself. And there have been a number of trials done around this subject over the years. Unfortunately, the results are not entirely consistent, although there are intriguing findings, because we know it's not only that cancer puts the cancer patient at increased risk of blood clots, but we know that the coagulation system can have a direct effect on the cancer itself. So it makes sense that perhaps interrupting that clotting system may have an impact on the cancer. But that's yet to be proven. So there's no firm recommendation for the use of blood thinners outside of the situations I mentioned, hospitalized or medical patients in the hospital, surgery patients, or patients who have had a blood clot, or a few selected patients in the outpatient setting. As I mentioned, these complications do have consequences that impact directly on the patient and the patient's quality of life. Unfortunately, there's not a great deal of quality of life data from these clinical trials, but clearly, as we've interviewed patients and as I look at my own experience, patients who develop these complications, they have pain, they end up in the hospital for a period of time, they're needing to take injections sometimes for weeks or months. It has real impact on patient quality of life. So the better we can do now and in the future to prevent these complications, the better job we will have done. So my final message is the guidelines are very important. They've had a dramatic impact on increasing awareness of these problems amongst patients and their treating physicians. The clinical trials have informed those guidelines, and they're extremely important. That's how we make progress in oncology, including this area of cancer and thrombosis. And I would remind everybody that the consequences of these complications of blood clots in cancer patients are very real to the patient, to the family, and to the entire healthcare system. So the more we learn from these trials and improve our ability to prevent these complications, the better the patients with cancer in the future will do, and the better outcomes they'll have. Carolyn, I'll turn it back to you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lyman, for a very informative presentation with lots of information. And we now have time for questions. We have lots of time for questions, and I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board, and we're going to try to take as many questions as possible. And if we don't get to your question, please, you'll call us at Cancer Care at the end of the call at 1-800-813-HOPE. Stephanie?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from Marcia R. Your line is open.
Yes. Thank you for everybody's presentations. They were very helpful. Dr. Mitchell, at the beginning of her discussion, mentioned three factors involved with, I think, the development of blood clots. The first was inflammation. I missed the second one, and I believe the third was imbalance in clotting factors. Could you just fill me in on that second one, please?
Yes. So what I said is there are three components to thrombotic events, as they may be called, the deep venous thromboses. And it's not simply just a blood clot. Number one, there is what we call vascular injury, or some inflammation or irritation of the blood vessel. Dr. Sawyer mentioned that having previous trauma or injury to the lower extremity puts the patient at higher risk. So some type of blood vessel injury or inflammation. The second is a decrease in blood flow. So it means that the blood is not flowing as rapidly through the vessels as previously. This could be caused by heart failure or kidney failure or a number of problems. It can also be associated with simply inactivity. So some activity is better than no activity, and patients in the hospital may have an increased risk of clots. So decreased blood flow is number two, and then an imbalance between factors that cause blood clotting and those that prevent or remove the blood clot. Every patient has factors in their body that cause clotting and factors that remove the clot from the body. So there is an imbalance whenever there is a clinically recognizable thrombosis or deep venous thrombosis.
Thank you very much. Okay, our next question, Stephanie.
Our next question comes from Atika Kay. Your line is open.
Hello, everybody. Thanks to all the doctors for this very informative presentation. I have two quick questions, please. My first question is there anything to do to prevent the development of those blood clots? And my second question is, if a person has a breast cancer and he's taking tamoxifen, would an anticoagulant lower the risk of the development of the blood clots?
Thank you. Those are excellent questions. Dr. Mitchell, could you address those questions?
Yes. So one of the questions regarding tamoxifen. We know that tamoxifen, as well as many other medications, might increase the risk of clot. This doesn't mean that you don't take the medication. It simply means that your treating physician must include that in his or her assessment of cancer and its treatment. So every medication that we give has some side effects, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't take tamoxifen because you're worried about the clot. It just means that we have to continuously check for that. There are certainly other medications besides tamoxifen that might increase the risk of clots. Also, if the patients get infections, and there are other conditions. So it's a matter of informing the physician and the treating team of all medications, all previous history, so that they can develop a plan that will help, one, prevent clot if possible, or two, treat the clot if necessary.
And Dr. Sawyer, did you want to comment on just preventing clots in general?
Sure. Thank you for the question. I think some of the things that people can do, they might underappreciate how important it is. So, for example, if you're a smoker at any point in your life, but then going on any kind of medication that increases your risk, you're really increasing the chances of having a blood clot. If you're carrying too much weight and you have some control over that, if you're inactive and can increase your physical activity, those are all things that people have control over that are important in modifying your risk factor for a blood clot.
We have actually a question from one of our online participants, from Susan. How effective can taking low-dose aspirin be as a prevention? Again, I'll ask that of Dr. Mitchell.
So I think for cancer patients, Dr. Lyman has very well described the five important areas that have been totally evaluated. For low-dose aspirin, in terms of prevention of clot in cancer patients, there have really been very few studies. And for the most part, I would refer to Dr. Sawyer, because low-dose aspirin has had its greatest effect in terms of clinical trials and benefit in patients who don't have cancer in the prevention of stroke and problems in relationship to the heart. For prevention of clots in cancer patients, however, aspirin has not been demonstrated as an effective preventive strategy, but I tell my patients who either have cancer or have survived cancer, unless there is an increased risk of bleeding or other complications from aspirin, I do recommend that they take aspirin because of its benefit in terms of other medical conditions that exclude cancer. So I would ask Dr. Sawyer to comment on aspirin and other medical problems.
Dr. Sure. Sawyer, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. The you know, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, aspirin can prevent strokes and heart attacks, which are clots also, but they're in the arteries of your body, the vessels coming away from the heart. Whereas we've been talking about clots in the veins, and aspirin has not, to my knowledge, been shown to prevent clots in the veins. And so by in and of itself, it's not enough to do the job, nor has it been shown to treat adequately blood clots that form. But as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, there are lots of other reasons to take aspirin, including, as we mentioned, heart attack and stroke prevention.
And this is wonderful because we do have the multidisciplinary team here, so that your questions are being answered by many different disciplines, and that's a very unique venue. Thank you. Our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Jacqueline W. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. I was wondering if one of the physicians could discuss the mechanism of action of Lovenox and why the frequent surveillance of blood counts, et cetera, do not have to be done when you're taking Lovenox. Thank you.
Dr. Sawyer, Dr. Lyman, do you want to address that?
I can start, and Dr. Lyman. Or, so, you know, Lovenox is a low molecular weight heparin, which is a form of heparin, which unfractionated high molecular weight heparin is used intravenously for longer, but it has variable metabolism, and so we monitor people's blood thinning when they're on heparin, but Lovenox is more readily predictable in terms of its metabolism, and so we don't have to monitor it. Now, that contrasts it with, say, Coumadin or Warfarin as well, that is a pill that you take but also needs to be monitored because we have very variable metabolism of Coumadin. And maybe Dr. Lyman can expand on that. I don't think I addressed the mechanism of action either.
Yeah, well, it's a very important question, and Dr. Sawyer pretty much addresses it. The challenge with low molecular weight heparins is they're not as readily reversible as the unfractionated heparin, which has to be given more frequently. We have means to do that, but it can be somewhat of a challenge. Of course, there are new anticoagulants coming along of an oral form, a pill form, which are just being introduced. Very little data in the cancer setting, so we don't know that they're efficacious and safe there. And at the moment, all the international guidelines recommend that when a cancer patient is a candidate for anticoagulation, again, in the hospital, surgery, or developing a blood clot, that the preferred approach is a low molecular weight heparin because of its dependable metabolism. As Dr. Sawyer said, it's ease, generally just one injection a day, and its effectiveness and safety profile, which is seems to be superior to that of warfarin in both regards. So it is a breakthrough, although it's still an injection, but it doesn't need to be monitored. But one has to be a little cautious that it's not as rapidly reversible or as easily reversible as the unfractionated heparin.
Thank you very much. And a question from one of our online participants, from Diana. How does this affect patients with lymphedema after breast cancer? Dr. Mitchell, would you address that?
Certainly. So lymphedema after breast cancer treatment can be a particularly stressful situation. It doesn't necessarily mean that clots will develop in that arm. It is important to inform the healthcare team of any development of edema, and they can then develop a plan of evaluating the edema in the extremity and then a treatment plan. And certainly activity of the arm after the development of lymphedema, very important, so that the healthcare team might recommend a type of elastic stocking for the arm. They may also recommend physical therapy so that movement may continue. But having lymphedema does not mean that there will be that there is a blood clot in the arm or that a blood clot will develop in the future. But certainly inactivity of that edematous or swollen arm can lead to a clot. But edema doesn't necessarily, or lymphedema doesn't necessarily mean a clot. Lymphedema occurs because the lymph vessels have either been removed or have been damaged by the treatment that the patients have received for breast cancer. So lymphedema is very different from the edema that occurs with a blood clot.
Excellent. Thank you. Very helpful. And our next question, please, Stephanie.
Our next question comes from Rosalind R. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering, would support stockings or pantyhose be a good way to help prevent blood clots, say, on a long plane flight?
Question. That's a great question. Dr. Sawyer, could you address that question?
Sure. I think it's a great question. I think the answer is probably yes. I don't know. Maybe Dr. Lyman can report if there's any randomized data to say that, but in general, I would say that seems like a good strategy, although I wouldn't dismiss the need for exercise as well.
Yeah, I would just add that we don't have any data in that specific setting, or in fact in the more common setting of patients just who are, you know, going about their daily activities. We do have some data from both randomized trials and abundant observational data that patients in the hospital, including cancer patients in the hospital, we know their risk is higher, that these compression stockings, and particularly those that kind of are constantly being compressed by various mechanisms are effective. By themselves, we don't rely on them for those high-risk settings. We usually also offer an anticoagulant, but by themselves, they do offer some prevention. So one might anticipate that if one was to use that in another situation like long flights, it might be useful. I know many of my colleagues who take an aspirin before a flight, and we already mentioned that there's not a lot of data around aspirin for preventing these clots, and so it's probably also not a reliable approach. But my guess is that it would work, but we just don't have good data in that particular setting.
These are really wonderful questions, I have to say. Very, very thoughtful questions and great
answers. Sure. I would like to add that with flying, it's very important to move the extremities. So moving the legs while one sits in a position or standing up to walk down the aisles approximately every hour might be a strategy also. There have just been almost no clinical trials evaluating these so that we have accurate evidence, but I think any activity is better than no activity, and any strategy to help prevent clots on long flights might work, but it's also important to just move the feet and legs and to stand up periodically.
That's a segue to the next question that we have from one of the online participants. Is there a preferred exercise that a cancer patient can use to help prevent clots? Shall I ask that of Dr. Sawyer?
Sure. I don't know about the specific to cancer, but I'll just in general, as Dr. Mitchell has mentioned, exercising your lower extremities, in particular your calves, where clots tend to be most prone to form, is important. If you have other risks like, you know, a catheter or pacemaker in, then also, you know, maintaining some muscle tone in your upper extremities as well is probably important. Please add to that, Dr. Lyman, Dr. Mitchell.
Anyone want to add further to that?
I think that specific exercises and activities really haven't been documented in cancer patients as well as we would like to think. But I usually encourage my patients to begin with aerobic exercises, so walking, swimming, and basic aerobic exercises. I don't know that there are other specific ones that are important for cancer patients, bicycling, walking, swimming are my suggestions.
Our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Mary W. Your line is open.
Thank you. Thank you for this informative presentation. I have multiple myeloma, and I'm on Revlimid, which is a high risk for DVTs. After being on it for about 18 months, I developed ischemic colitis and had to have a surgery of a resectioning of the colon. How does ischemia tie in with blood clots?
One question. Again, these are wonderful questions. Dr. Sawyer, can you address that?
Do my best. I'm sorry to hear about your complications. It's unlikely that the ischemic colitis is related to the type of clots we've been talking about today, the venous clots. And I guess I defer to my oncology colleagues on whether it is related at all to your other conditions.
Dr. Lyman, Dr.
Yeah, I would just add, I agree with that. Whether it does relate to the, you know, the anti-angiogenesis agents, you know, that do have an effect on the blood circulation, the tumor, and can also affect other parts of the arterial vascular system, I think we don't know. We know that, of course, patients with multiple myeloma, and I, you know, also sorry you had this complication, but we do know that sometimes the protein in the blood gets sufficiently high that it can kind of slow up the blood flow, one of those characteristics that Dr. Mitchell talked about that may predispose to clots. But it would be hard to attribute the specific event to that or specifically to the treatment. Now, this is one of the areas I mentioned earlier that from the guidelines perspective, patients with multiple myeloma receiving lenalidomide or thalidomide along with either a steroid, you know, a hormonal agent or with chemotherapy, the risk of the blood clots is sufficiently high to consider a discussion with your doctor about any need for anticoagulation. In the setting you've already experienced, I think that would be all the more important to discuss risk and benefit if that was to be considered.
Well, I would also agree and add that ischemic colitis is really very, very different from clot formation. And ischemic colitis with Revlimid is very rare. Yet blood clots when Revlimid is given, especially in conjunction with dexamethasone, can be very commonly seen. So I'm really very sorry that you had this condition. It may have been related to Revlimid. It may have not, because ischemic colitis can be seen in individuals who do not have cancer. So because of its rarity, I would not say that it was related to the Revlimid, but certainly it has been reported with Revlimid, but it's a very rare condition reported with Revlimid.
Thank you all, and Mary, thank you for that excellent question. We do recommend that you go back to your treating healthcare team, of course, and ask them further questions, but we're glad you asked your question here as well. And I want to thank our speakers. They've really been quite outstanding, haven't they? They've been wonderful, and I know we could go on for another hour probably with all the questions, but this is an hour program. I also want to thank all of you who've queued up and really asked really, really amazing questions today. This was an outstanding call, and all of you who've been listening. I do want to remind you that in planning a program like this is a one-hour education program. We do recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. And so with that in mind, I just want to kind of review with all of you the services that you can access from Cancer Care. And those services really are, they're endless, actually. They're here for you to access when you need them. We have a staff of 40 master's level trained oncology social workers, and we're here to provide a host of services, from financial and practical assistance to counseling services, to actually a chance to talk with someone, a kind of fancy word for talking with someone who's a professional who listens to you when you're concerned. We also offer support groups, both on the telephone and online. We have, of course, these education workshops, and we do have booklets and materials. But most importantly, we don't want anyone to leave today's program feeling that you are alone. We want you to know now that you're part of this community of support and that you can access help from Cancer Care at any time. You can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE, and that means if you didn't get to ask a question today, please do call us. And also, if you prefer to visit our web, www.cancercare.org. But again, we are simply a telephone call away for each of you, and do take advantage of these services. And they're free, and we're here to help you. I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.